Franchising is the most misunderstood and most overlooked form of entrepreneurship. We're here to educate you and help you find the entrepreneur within. Franchising is not all about the French fries. We find that individuals who are exploring business ownership tend to have a lot of misperceptions and misunderstandings about the franchise industry. So what we want to do is help prospective business owners make confident and educated decisions before moving forward or not moving forward with a business. Welcome to Unpredicted Entrepreneur. Hello, and welcome to episode 68 of Unpredicted Entrepreneur. My name is Sarah Wasco, and I am joined by my colleague, Roxanne Rapsky. We are with FranNet of Dallas-Fort Worth in Oklahoma, and we created this podcast to provide information and resources about business ownership and franchising. And we tried to bring on a wide variety of guests with a variety of backgrounds to really be informative for any business owners or prospective business owners about some aspects of franchising. And we are thrilled today to welcome our guest, Mike Reeder. Mike is the brand president of Arkadek Outdoor Living, and he has a great story to share with us. So Mike, welcome to Unpredicted Entrepreneur. Thanks for joining us today.
Well, thank you. I look forward to talking to you guys.
Well, thank you again, and we're grateful to have your insight today. So one of the things that really intrigued us about you and why we wanted to have you share your experiences with us is you came from, you've done a flip from hospitality to being a franchisee and now being brand president of your franchise. So share with us a little bit of that history and that background and kind of how you came to be where you are today.
Okay. So I am originally from Columbus, Ohio, and I went down to school at the University of Houston. Quite a big difference, especially if you grow up a mile from the Ohio State University. But, you know, I wanted to get into hotel restaurant management. So I my sister was a professor at the University of Houston and kind of shared with me how that would be a great school. And I really was interested in that career. So went through school, graduated, and was fortunate enough to work for get an offer from Hyatt Hotels when they moved me out to California. I worked for Hyatt for about 15 years, even starting in college, and then got into management roles. I finished my career with them in 97. And I was the executive assistant manager of a hotel near Disneyland in Anaheim, California. And I left not really because I was thinking out externally that I wanted to do something different. I was recruited by a headhunter, and they were interested in attracting hotel hospitality managers into the golf business. And being an avid golfer, what an opportunity to work in something that you really love. And I became a general manager of two properties out in Palm Springs. Did that for a couple of years, and they promoted me back to Dallas, Texas, where I'd spent a couple interns in the Dallas market in the hotels. And then I was in charge of four different host courses in Texas. And a couple of years later, they called me and said they were running out of funds. So the company was going belly up. So what am I going to do? I think in the back of my mind, I always wanted to be an entrepreneur. I was looking at opening businesses. I knew it was something eventually I wanted to get to. So how'd that happen? I started researching companies that I perhaps wanted to start on my own, got into franchising, started researching that, looked at a couple different franchise opportunities. Ironically enough, my mother was getting up in age back in Columbus, and I had been researching franchises, and I went to go visit her at DFW Airport. I pulled up an Entrepreneur 500 magazine. Oh. And I thought, hey, this is another resource to find some franchises. And ironically, I highlighted a couple of them, and one of them was this thing called Arkadek. While I was in town, I started doing a little bit more research on it. I had been I never really worked in construction, but I grew up, my grandfather was a business owner and had a concrete block plant. So I was there. I was intrigued with his success over time. My dad had a small business for a while. I had worked a little bit in construction during college, working with my brother-in-law. I'm pretty handy. So being mechanically inclined, it kind of intrigued me. The more I studied it, I found that, you know, this is an opportunity. I could bring my service skills that I'd experienced in hotels to an industry that's not known to be service oriented. I think anybody who's worked with contractors, hopefully or not hopefully, has unfortunately had a story about that. So that led me to Arkadek. I did that due diligence on Arkadek for about 7 months. I took it from there. So that's how I got there.
That is very interesting. That path was clearly not straight. Went from hospitality to Arkadek, which is, why don't you explain to us exactly what Arkadek does?
Sure. So Arkadek is architectural decks is the meaning of the original name. It was founded in 1980 in Richmond, Virginia, by an architect and a contractor. And they were trying to bring in more architectural feel and design to the deck business. And it started here. It became a franchise, I believe, in 1987, 1988. So we've been franchising over 35 years, still based here in Richmond, Virginia. But our specialty is this. We design and build. So we're a construction company. But we build outdoor living spaces. So what does that mean? That means pretty much everything outside. We'll do decks, we'll do porches, whether they be open porches or patio covers, as they say down in Dallas, pergolas, patios, fire features like fire pits, fireplaces, outdoor kitchens, etc. And it's kind of evolved into that while I was a franchisee. And, you know, when I was a franchisee in the early 2000s, there were in Columbus, Ohio, it's kind of flat like Dallas. And I would go, people would want to have a deck or they were considering a patio. And a lot of times I would lose those potential contracts because of that, because patios are generally cheaper than a structure. So some of us, including myself, started selling patios as part of our offerings. So that kind of created this broad-based category that we had. So a lot of the franchisees started not only doing decks, they started in porches, they started doing patios and hardscapes. And then it has evolved from there. So we design, build those. We love what we do.
Something I want to back up and talk about is, you know, you made a point about bringing your professionalism being in the hospitality and service industry to an industry that's not always known for their great service. And I think that's one of the things that people might miss about franchising is it's not necessarily that you're getting into franchising and creating something new or a brand new industry. You're taking mature industries where there's a lot of mom and pops a lot of times, but you're consolidating that industry. And as a whole, when you're joining a franchise, you're typically joining an organization that's going to bring professionalism to what it is, whatever it is you're offering. And a lot of times it is home services. It could be painting or window coverings or whatever. So I think that's important to point that out.
Yeah. I think the most of the industry and home services, it's people that have started their own companies, but they didn't really have a professional background. Maybe they went to high school in most cases and they go right into the industries. I think, no offense, because there's a lot of great contractors out there, but the norm are people that get into the business as tradesmen. And then who are they working for? Other contractors just like themselves. Yeah. Those contractors, no offense to them, but they're not as organized. They didn't have a higher level of education, never work in a professional environment. Yeah. And they go out and they work for these people. They never get paid on time. They never get the materials delivered so that they can actually do their job. They're chasing their money and everything's last minute. And most importantly is they're not really good financially with business money. You know, you can't manage your business based on what your checking account says, right? So I think that opened up in my eyes when I was researching it. I knew I could bring that level of professionalism to the industry. And I can tell you that that is really the theme of what we do. We bring a professionalism to the industry that's not known to be professional. And it's evidence. We're in our national Google rankings are 4.8. That's unheard of. And it's because of
impressive.
That.
Yeah, that is impressive. And mm-hmm. kind of going back to you becoming a franchisee, you said you got out of training 41 days before 9/11. So what was that like?
Yeah, lucky me, right?
Yeah.
The things that you don't know, right? I signed my franchise agreement in May of 2001, came to training in July, and it was 4 weeks long. And then those days came back and opened my doors. It was August 4th. I remember it. It was my 11th wedding anniversary.
Wow.
And it was a Monday, right? So, got the, in those days, marketing was a little bit different. You know, I went to the Columbus Dispatch and signed a contract for $20,000 to have my little teensy little ad of 2x3 in the Columbus newspaper home and garden section on Sundays.
Wow.
And, getting leads like that or putting an ad in Yellow Pages, obviously life's a lot different now, even though it was a short time ago. And then, of course, what happened on September 11th, I was kind of in a shock.
Yeah. Sure.
Ironically enough, I sold my first job on September 13th for a whopping $2,500 for a knee wall and an existing open porch. And it kind of went from there.
So started with a knee wall. Tell us how you grew your business and you owned it for, what'd you say, 15, 16 years?
Yeah.
So tell us about your success as a franchisee.
Yeah. I mean, I was blessed. After the events of 9/11, certainly a lot of things changed, but I think people still were there. That's the beautiful thing about this industry is people will always invest in their homes. In a lot of cases, that's their number one asset that they have. That's the advantage of home remodeling. And we are considered in the remodeling business, even though we do a lot of new construction, right? We're not a home builder. We're kind of categorized in this remodeling industry. And even in macroeconomic times, I'm sure we can talk further about this later on, but that was one of the things I found is in down macroeconomic times, people will still invest in their money. They may not go spend $5,000 on a vacation or buy a $50,000 car, but they will spend money on their home. So that's an attraction. So back to your original question. Yeah, I was lucky. 2002 was my first calendar year. And I think my average sale was probably $9,000, $11,000. And I sold $450,000 in my first year. And it was all really because of the leads that happened that spring of 2002. Home shows and doing other marketing. And I was like, wow, walked out of a home show with 35 leads and wow. Probably sold 10 of them. I don't remember. But it kind of launched the business. Not having a whole lot of construction help, I had to rely on the franchisor to help me in those days. A lot of phone calls, a lot of handholding to make sure that I was doing the right thing. And I, finding the contractors, I got lucky, and not to say nobody gets lucky, but I was able to go through and find the right contractors. And, I hired a kid in 2002, and he was 19 years old, and he was like my third contractor. He's still working at Architect Columbus today. 22
wow,
years later.
That's amazing.
So, there's a lot. So I had a high degree of success. I got up to about in late 2008, I was pretty much by myself with an office manager and I was doing all the sales. I was doing the production. I had some good crews at that time. And then the crash of 08 happened. That was obviously very scary. Yeah. I had that year I sold, I think it was just under $1 million. And the next year I only went down by about 15%.
Wow.
So I dropped it down to like $790,000 the next year. And then by 2009, it ramped up. We could talk a lot. I finished in 2015, which was my last full year at $2 million. Our average sale was about 21 grand. And I did 100 jobs that year.
Wow.
With a team of myself, still doing part-time sales, had a full-time salesperson, had a production manager who managed all the production. He had an assistant. We called him a production coordinator, had another office manager kind of help with marketing and pre-construction activities. And we had I think about six crews knocking out 100 jobs a year. It was a lot, but it was great.
So 2008 was just a little blip for you and you just kept trucking right along.
Yeah. And again, I'm not trying to pretend it. I mean, you know, one of the things the franchisor told us in bad economic times, you're still going to, you know, you're not going to have this huge amount of people that are going to be in normal times interested in your, in what you offer, but you have to double down on your marketing because that doesn't shrink and go away. It's just a smaller amount of group of people that are willing to and still have the financial abilities to buy what we offered. So I doubled down on my marketing and I survived it. And you know, it was a struggle, but it wasn't like I ever was worried about writing a paycheck to somebody. We still had the funds to do so. And that's being well capitalized too.
Well,
keeping the money in the business.
Well, the first knee jerk reaction when something like that happens is to stop spending marketing dollars. That's
exactly
what most business owners will do. And we have this conversation a lot when a franchisor is telling you, you need to spend X amount of dollars on marketing to be successful. That's the amount that you need to spend. Not half that, not two thirds of that. It's that amount. So interesting.
Preach it all the time. And you know, even in 2022, obviously we came off the COVID in our industry, you know, we went from $71 million in system sales to 93. And that's a lot. But in 2002, things started softening. We had to re-educate the guys. Hey, you need to keep investing in your marketing and double down. So yeah, that's definitely what you have to do. There's no question about it. Because all the other competitors, they're going to stop marketing because that's the easiest thing to get rid of.
Yeah.
And it's dangerous.
It is dangerous. And a lot of people just kind of curl up in a ball when something like that happens instead of really going the other direction and hitting it full swing. So, so you sold your business after owning it for 15 years. What motivated you? Did you know you were going to become brand president when you sold? So tell us a little bit about that transition. Okay.
It was the furthest thing from my mind.
Okay.
So
you didn't sell.
It's a good story. So back in 2008 and even seven, so I'd been in about 6 years, right? I had hired a couple salespeople to try to scale it. And I hired, I think, one production guy to help it, and all of them failed. So I was really caught at this point. And let's take away what happened in 2007 and 2008. But I was stuck. I couldn't do anymore by myself. I couldn't grow it. And I wanted to grow the business. I wanted to scale this thing. So, you know, the franchisor and the leadership team, Scott Zide, Chris Grand Prix, and our CFO, Corey Schrader, they invited me to come. And I was explaining, listen, I need some help. And they came to me. They're basically my board of directors. They brought my books. And for three consecutive years, I started creating this habit. I'm going to come to them and use their advice. And we got into the numbers a lot more in depth than I really ever knew. And they showed me how to scale this business. And quite frankly, the reason I failed in hiring people in the past was I was just out of time. I was making rash decisions because as a business owner, you're busy. Mm. But, you know, hiring slow and firing fast, right? So, you know, they really helped me. So I became very, very close to them over the next 5 years. And they're the ones that kind of taught me. So, and like, as I said, in 2009, I started ramping up. I finally got a really good salesperson. And quickly thereafter that, in 2010, I believe, I got a production manager and then I hired. So then we were able to scale and I had the infrastructure, the people in place in order to do that. So we quickly went from, you know, 800,000 in 2008, I think that's right, to by 2013, I was at $1.8 million. So they kind of helped me. So how does that fit into me going into this position? In 2013, I believe, maybe it was 14, I had to renew my franchise agreement. So as part of me coming here annually, they asked me, you know, hey, how long are you going to stay in? And I was like, you know, I'm not really sure. I mean, you guys have helped me so much. My goal is I want to get this thing to $2 million. Now I've got an asset. I'm kind of one of those guys. All right, what's next in my life? Now I've learned this. What's next? And I could sell this asset. And I was like, you know, maybe I'll buy another franchise. Maybe I'll look at some of our sister brands that Outdoor Living Brands has. Maybe I'll go find a distressed business. You know, I want to do something different. So then, they, you know, their ears got pretty big. And for some reason, I still don't know to this day why, they started talking to me about coming to Richmond. And I had two young boys. And, you know, I built my dream house. My wife and I were very happy. And I said no a couple times. And then finally they came back to me. And the more I thought about it, you know, it was it number one, number time, was it the time for me to do it? Well, I had reached my goal. Number two, my salesperson, who was working for me had expressed interest. Mike, if you ever sell this thing, I'd be interested in doing it. Number three, I think I've always been one of those, this is the honest God's truth, one of those guys that, you know, always want to retire and give back. And I've always been a trainer. And in my previous career in the hotel business, I always loved that. And I thought, you know what? I could, the brand number one, I think, needs some help. I think number two, I think that I could really, I could do what I wanted to do in retirement and get paid for it. And that's really why the decision I got. And, you know, fortunately, I was able to get equity in the company. So it's been a great decision. So I've been here about 8 years now.
That's wonderful. Yeah. So tell us a little bit about what you've done since you've been in this role and some of your accomplishments.
Thank you. I think if I had to summarize that or answer that question, honestly, there's two things. Number one is teaching the franchisees how to scale. And I that was what I learned from Chris and Scott and Corey as a franchisee. My predecessor on the role, great guy. But he just, I think he had other priorities he had to work on. And we were the franchisees at that time, they were mostly owner operators and not many of them wanted to scale. So like me, when I was in there, I was an anomaly that I wanted to scale this thing. So I think taking that and the level of franchise and bringing that scaling. And, you know, when I was a franchisee back in 14 or 15, I can't remember which year it was, like, it was, we always celebrated at the annual meeting, the number of franchises that exceeded $1 million in sales. And it was around 10, which is about, I don't know, 25, 20, 30%. No, less than that, 20%. And now over 50% are over $1 million. Our $1 million is actually not the really the standard anymore. It's 2 million.
That's fantastic.
Because of increased prices and stuff. Yeah. So I think I'm very, very proud of that. Taught them how to scale in formulaic ways that I was taught from Corey Schrader, and helping them looking at their financials, evaluating their financials, getting their evaluating where the opportunities are in their financials so they can improve based on their tenure with us. I think that's number one. Number two is onboarding. When I got here, we were always reactive in the regards, if somebody called us, we would answer the phone. We'd help you all day long. But from new franchisees, you know, there's a tremendous amount of handholding that needs to be taking place, right? And we needed to be more proactive in our support, not only to new franchisees, young franchisees, but tenured franchisees. So we've completely changed that around, where the amount of proactive support, meaning we're calling them, we're scheduling appointments once a month, or we're scheduling appointments once a week or a couple of days, depending on the tenure of the franchisee. And that has changed it all. We've seen guys ramp up faster when there's new franchise, they're getting in the black sooner. And you know, that's what my job is, right? My job for a new franchisee is to get them in the black as soon as possible. So I think those are the two most important things I'm most proud of.
That's fantastic. You know, it's like having a built-in business coach. Right. That's kind of what you're getting when you're having somebody get into your books and coach you and teach you how to grow and make this thing bigger. So I love,
well, that's what you want,
that.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's what they want. That's what they deserve. And it's, you know, we have, they're paying for their royalties, right? What are you paying for? Well, you're paying for the book, right? You're paying for the map. But as you become more tenured, it's more of a consulting base, right? It's consulting. We want to give that. We want to bend in their ear. We want to give them another perspective that perhaps they're not thinking about in whatever aspect of the business they're struggling with.
Are you looking for someone different now, a different type of franchisee than you were back then? Is there, you know, because you had a lot of owner operators then, right? And now you have people that are focusing more on the business. So has the ideal candidate changed over time?
Yes, it has. It actually was changing before I got in this role. I think, you know, in Arcadec in its younger days, there was unusual, not unusual, I shouldn't say that, but there were more people that worked in the contracting world that bought Arcadec than there are now. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
People that may have wanted to convert their remodeling business and add an Arcadec to it. So, or they were just kind of a contractor type. So we're getting more professionals that have worked in professional environments. We're for corporate America. They're corporate refugees that want to start their own business. And, you know, to elaborate a little bit about that, you know, I look at certain characteristics of our most successful franchisees, and it's simple. It's probably applicable to a lot of different business ownership. But number one is, do you know how to build a team? Are you a jerk to work for, or are you a good coach, mentor, trainer, onboarder, recruiter, all those things? Because if you want to grow, you got to be a good person to work for. Number two, you have to be coachable if you're going to come into a franchise. We can give you this book, but you got to use it.
Right.
Yep. And if you don't use it and you go off on the road, you know, we probably need to talk a little bit, because you're probably not having much success going outside the boundaries of what we're trying to teach you. We bring them back. So coachability is huge. And, you know, you don't really need to know anything about construction. We do like people that are mechanically inclined.
Yeah.
That helps them, because it's a longer learning curve if they don't. The principles of construction have been around thousands of years. You know, you put a footer in the ground, you put a post up, put a beam up, infrastructure, and you build up. It's not rocket science. It takes time to learn it if you've never been in the industry before, but it's not insurmountable.
I really appreciate that insight for what you're looking for in an owner, and you clearly have that figured out and buttoned up. And yes, it's helpful to have that construction experience, but people still struggle, I think, grasping what their transferable skills are from corporate America. And just like you transferred your hospitality related and customer service related skills, there are so many opportunities for people to be able to utilize their skills in a completely different industry and still have success. And, you know, Roxanne and I kind of were giggling when you were talking about following the recipe, and, you know, you can present it to them, but they have to agree to follow it. And we tell them every day, if you're not going to follow the franchisor's process, don't buy that franchise. So
exactly. And I tell them the same thing. Listen, I'll give you a good example. Is somebody that comes in with a lot of sales experience, right? Well, selling technology is completely different than selling a patio and a deck to a homeowner, especially when you're going into their home. Yeah. And some people want to use those skills that they've learned and try that. Well, come on back here. Get over here. Do this. Just try it. Try it for 4 months. I promise you, it's going to be successful. And then once you're successful, you're going to obviously continue doing that. But later on, if you want to change things and you're still successful, that's fine. Just don't do it at the beginning.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Once you understand the business, it's different than, for sure.
Crucial.
Well, if someone were to approach you personally and say, you know, you've been successful, Mike, in business, what kind of tip would you give me? I'm just starting out. I'm just considering buying a business. Not even sure if I want a franchise. What hot tip would you give me, or what's something that I could use before I go out and I start looking for a business?
If you had to gamble on yourself, would you? If you had to gamble,
that's a great
on
question.
Your abilities, would you?
Yeah.
That's a great question. I think that's a summary, right?
Yeah.
You know, I think you need to know, you don't, in Arcadec's perfect example, you don't need to actually know the industry. You can learn the industry. I think if you're vetting franchises, you need to vet them. You need to do the due diligence. I think there are several things that we tell our prospective franchisees is, number one is, you know, you got to ask a lot of questions. And we, as the franchisor, when I talk to prospective franchisees, and I do a lot, I give them questions to ask because I was in their chair. Mm-hmm. We help them with financial questions to ask. So here's we're not giving you financials, but here's what to ask about the financials. And, you know, you've got to have, you got to ask questions not only about the business, deeper dive into the industry to know what the industry's like. And there's plenty of data out there. When I 2001, there was plenty of data for me at a library.
That's a little different now too.
Yeah. But you know, yeah, exactly. But there's so much data online. I think looking at the industry itself, I've shared some of comments about that, why it attracted me to Arkadek. But, and then, you know, really validating and interviewing the franchisees and kind of going back, once you've done enough due diligence, don't listen to the naysayers. If you're confident you would gamble on yourself, ignore that. Go. Because if you got a good franchisor, and I'd love to say that we are, I believe we are wholeheartedly, because we're going to hold your hand. We're going to hold your hand. And you still got to do it, but there's not a problem that we can't solve together. And are you going to stumble? Yeah, you're going to stumble. Everybody does. I did. Everybody does. But we want to protect you to protect your margins so that you're going to be successful eventually.
You know, excellent advice, because so many of the naysayers, none of the naysayers have done the amount of research that the folks that have done your candidates are doing a ton of research, and the naysayers are just sitting in the background observing and giving their opinion. So
we tell them now, I'm sorry to interrupt, Roxanne, but here's something else I said is you got to do a business plan.
Oh, yeah.
Now, I can't review the business plan and comment to a prospective franchisee, but if you do it, that means you're doing the research and you're prepared yourself to make a good decision.
Well, I got to say, I've gone to some local trade shows and run into some outdoor living concepts, franchise owners, and they've all sung the praises of the brands that they're in. So that's really good to hear from our end that they're being supported well and they're so happy. So thank you for sharing your wisdom with us and your experience today so that our listeners that are prospective business owners can hear what you have to say. If someone wanted to get a hold of you, how would they reach you?
Yeah. So you can contact us at arkadek.com, arkadek.com. Certainly you can find my contact information on our website as well. There's an 800 number, 800-722-4668. And we'd be happy to help anyway.
Great. Well, thank you again for joining us today. For those of you listening, thanks for listening in. Please reach out to Sarah and I or follow us on LinkedIn. We're very active there. I'm Roxanne Rapske, R-A-P-S-K-E. Sarah with no H, Wasko, W-A-S-K-O-W. You can also find us on Franet.com. You can find our YouTube channel. It's Franet of Dallas, Fort Worth, and Oklahoma, and you can find Unpredicted Entrepreneur on any of the podcasting platforms. Thanks for joining us. Bye-bye.